The following is an excerpt from the Science Podcast. To hear the whole show, visit www.sciencemag.org and click on Science Podcast.
Finally today, Daniel Strain, an online news writer for Science, is here with some of the latest stories from our daily news site. So, Dan, in our first story, we've got a snapshot of medicine from the 17th century.
Yeah, we have a project that is going to dabble in the medical records of a 17th century physician named Simon Forman. And Mr. Forman was, I guess character isn't quite the word for it. He was apparently a notorious sexual predator. He was an alchemist, and actually there are rumors that he also worshipped the devil. In addition to that, his physician practice revolved largely around astrology. He would take patients and hear their symptoms and get their histories and then make recommendations based on the stars. But this project does a bit to clean up his legacy, because while he may have been a bit of an eccentric, to say the least, he collected some of the most detailed medical records of the Elizabethan era.
So he certainly sounds quite unorthodox in his methods. What use are these records today?
There are apparently a lot of uses. A lot of researchers are fairly excited about this. So what this comes out of is a project called the Simon Forman Casebook Project. It was announced last week in England for Mr. Forman's 400th birthday. And what it's going to be doing is taking his extensive list of medical records, there are about 50,000 cases in all, and turning them into a format that's intelligible for people all over to look through and search. And historians are quite excited about it. It's going to be one of the most extended, most unprecedented looks at medical history in that era.
So if these medical records contain astrological data and medical data, I mean, I imagine there must be so much information in here. What sort of information did Forman record?
Yeah, well, despite being a quack, he actually took very meticulous records. They think he saw maybe around 30,000 patients over this several decade long period. And he noted pretty much everything about them, who their family were, their names, their ages, their symptoms. All of this was, of course, very important for him for recording their astrological history. But it's also something that could be very useful for medical historians.
And now we move from Elizabethan England to the Galapagos Islands. What are we studying there?
So this is actually quite a disturbing study, and it's a study looking at chick abuse by a type of bird called the Nazca booby. And this bird lives on the Galapagos Islands. And what actually happens is they see this very common behavior. These birds sort of nest together. A neighbor will often walk over to another bird's nest and start actually very viciously biting the chicks that are in that nest. And it can cause serious harm. Unfortunately, researchers have taken a very sort of close look at this behavior and showed the sort of long-lasting consequences for those abused birds.
And obviously, this sort of research has implications also for child abuse in humans.
It's a very well-known fact that, sadly, a lot of folks that are abused as children often wind up growing up to be abusers themselves. Scientists weren't just sure if this was a human phenomenon, however, and it actually looks like it is a phenomenon that can go into the animal world, namely for this booby species.
All right, so how are scientists able to actually study individual birds of these species? How did they set up this experiment?
So they followed this population in the Galapagos for several years, and what they did is they actually tracked these birds from chicks to adulthood. And what they found is actually sort of a tragic finding, is that the chicks that were sort of viciously attacked when they were young grew up to be birds that were more likely to be chick abusers themselves.
Now, this sort of behavior I don't think is particularly common in nature. Why do scientists think that this particular species exhibits this behavior?
Well, they don't actually know all that well. They think it may have to do with this bird's history sort of as chicks. What is very common in these boobies is that they'll lay two eggs in every nest, but they can only actually, in most situations, care for a single egg. So what you see is you get a lot of violence between chicks that hatch from the same nest, between siblings. They actually try to fight each other to be the one that gets taken care of. And scientists think it might be a byproduct of this. There's also some potential that being attacked as a chick has some long-lasting consequences in terms of hormone that actually increases aggression later on in life.
So how similar is this kind of abuse and these kind of long-term effects to those observed in humans?
Well, and that's a big caution of this paper, is that while it certainly seems similar, it's important not to jump to that conclusion right away. For starters, it's sort of interesting that human abuse, sadly, tends to be between a relative and a child. In these species, it's actually a non-relative or a neighbor, which is sort of an interesting different angle. And with humans, obviously, this behavior of sort of abused individuals often, not always, of course, but sometimes growing up to becoming abusers themselves, has to do with sort of very deep psychological sort of effects. Whereas scientists would say that in this particular species of booby, it has to do somewhat with how they're hardwired to fight as very young birds.
And lastly today, we've got another exciting advancement in stem cell research.
Yeah, this is actually a very neat, obviously it's not there yet, but it's a very neat sort of potential for folks that have a very dangerous particular type of liver disease. This disease is called alpha-1 antitrypsin deficiency. What happens is in a normal functioning liver, liver cells will produce a particular type of protein that actually travels to the lungs and protects the lungs from inflammation. Unfortunately, people with this very devastating disease have actually a mutation in that gene. They produce sort of faulty versions of the same protein that then tend to get stuck and accumulate in the liver. This can cause symptoms like cirrhosis, and actually many people have to wind up getting a liver transplant. So it's pretty bad news, and it's rare, but at least 100,000 people in the United States are inflicted by it.
And so how are stem cells being used in respect to this disease?
Well, this is a very fascinating look at a potential treatment for this disease, which is actually at the same time very simple. So to start off, what the researchers did is they took actually skin cells and they turned them into what are called induced pluripotent stem cells. These are sort of blank slate style cells, cells that are similar to embryonic cells that can grow into a wide range of different types of body tissue. What they did actually in these cells is they took faulty cells, cells that had this particular type of deficiency, and they almost did a bit of editing. What they did is they snipped out the faulty genes, and they actually put in the healthy versions of the genes that produce the good version of the protein. Then once they did that, what they're able to do is turn these stem cells actually into liver cells. So they turn this sort of blank slate cell into a liver cell. They injected them into mouse livers, and what happened is, very excitingly, for about 5 weeks after this injection, the mice actually produced this healthy form of the protein.
So is this a technique that can only be used for this disease in particular?
And that's actually what is exciting. The researchers point to the fact that it's a very sort of simple technique. I mean, it's more complicated than this, but it's a bit of cutting and pasting. And they suggest that it could have implications actually for a number of diseases that, like this particular type of deficiency, are caused by a single mutation in one gene. So able to take out these other faulty genes and replace them with well-functioning genes.
So is this technique ready for use in clinics?
No, it's a pretty far cry away from actually being tested in humans. One of the big considerations is obviously safety. And this is what the researchers are being very careful about. Because when you do this type of cutting and pasting work, you have the potential to introduce other types of mutations into these cells. And these mutations could be harmless, or they could actually cause effects like cancer. The researchers watched the mice that they injected these cells into, and they didn't see any signs of cancer, but that's not to suggest that it wouldn't ever happen. So they need to be pretty careful about what else is going along with these good versions of the genes.
All right, so what else has been in the news this week?
Yeah, also in Science Now, we have a new look at a type of snail that actually bobs along at the surface of oceans using what's basically an inflatable raft made out of mucus. We also have a DNA analysis that looks at the contents of amphoras, so ancient containers taken from Greek shipwrecks. And in Science Insider, we have an analysis of a new immigration reform efforts that could have implications for skilled workers, including scientists, for staying longer in this country.
Daniel Strain is an online news writer for Science. You can check out the latest science news and the policy blog, Science Insider, at news.sciencemag.org.